First case on our calendar is 97-310, Cincinnati Bell Telephone Group, City of Cincinnati. Mr. Daniel.
We have placed the court. My name is Richard Daniel. I represent the City of Cincinnati. Counsel for appellants, cities of Lewis, Fairfax, Mr. Alan Avis, and Mr. Mark Vanderbilt. Those are three consolidated appeals. If we're honest about the issue before the court today, we will acknowledge, we the appellants, we Cincinnati Bell Telephone Court, that there really is a jurisprudential mess that's been created over decades of decisions that the court itself has described as ambiguous, inconsistent, and conflicting. Cincinnati Bell Telephone, in the record, this is at pages 10 to 11 of its brief, the supplement of its brief says, I have to say there's nothing really great about any of these Supreme Court of Ohio opinions that summarizes things and just puts things in a nutshell. The problem is that for many years, this court has imposed its self-described judicial antipathy to double taxation as a justification for implied preemption of city ordinances. And as the court knows, the basic facts and basic issues in this case are that there's an alleged implied preemption of municipal income tax ordinances by a state statute that is a different kind of tax on different kinds of income.
Can it be argued here that this is a double taxation in as much as the municipalities here are taxing what is income that is otherwise exempted by the state when it collects its tax on utilities?
Well, that's the argument raised by Cincinnati Bell. However, that's not how this court has described its judicial antipathy to double taxation. This court's judicial antipathy, which again is a problem that I'll discuss, but this court's judicial antipathy to double taxation has applied where the same tax of a city and a state has affected the same revenue. In this case, we have two different kinds of taxes, a state excise tax and a city income tax applying to two different revenues. So, no, it is not double taxation within the meaning that this court has ascribed to that doctrine that this court has created. And part of the reason why the case law has been ambiguous and inconsistent and conflicting is because implied preemption, if used at all, and frankly, I would concede there are some very narrow, concrete circumstances in which courts may have to imply preemption. And those circumstances, which don't exist here, are one, there might be a conflict between a state statute and an ordinance, such that both cannot be honored. That's not the situation here. We do not have a conflict. There may be a situation where there's a dominant and overriding state need, which is hindered by virtue of a city ordinance. There's no dominant and overriding state need here, nor is there any hindrance. By way of example, in federal case law, you see the example of national defense. The federal government has to control our national defense. You can't have each state trying to do the same thing. There's a dominant and overriding federal need. There may be words in a statute which, even though they're not expressed preemption, the words, they're not artfully drafted, but this court, in a proper judicial function, can look at the words, interpret the words, and discern legislative intent that the words are intended to preempt, even though they don't say to cities, thou shalt not, as Section 718.01F of the revised code does, actually. The General Assembly has preempted cities from taxing certain kinds of income. The General Assembly
says, well, are there any inherent problems of either measurement or allocation of this tax?
No, I think Your Honor is referring to Commerce Clause issues. There are no Commerce Clause issues. The taxes properly apportioned and allocated within the meaning of the Commerce Clause. There are no issues
and it's a tax that is capable of being measured. society that these businesses would have onto hardship.
There is no such issue of corporate. This tax has been paid by Cincinnati Bell to the city of Cincinnati for 40 years, more than 40 years.
If there is a doctrine of implied preemption or preemption by implication, was that judicially created? If it exists?
Of necessity, the doctrine of implied preemption is a judicially invoked doctrine. However, it puts you at the outer perimeters of your judicial function and brings you face to face with risks that you're going to perform what I would argue is an efficient, lawful, and a necessary legislative function.
Yeah, I didn't ask that. I understand the argument. The question is it judicially created? And the answer is yes, isn't that correct? So there is not any statutory provision or even constitutional provision that in fact invokes the doctrine of preemption.
There is no constitutional or statutory provision which invokes the doctrine.
So does it also follow then if it exists and was judicially created, it can be judicially changed?
Absolutely. That's all inherent in what your Honor is describing. I would say it's circumscribed by the separation of powers inherent in the state constitution. And you've created a doctrine, you can change the doctrine. This is an opportunity for this court to really clarify once and for all what implied preemption is, very narrow circumstances under which this court will undertake to apply implied preemption, establish that this is not such a case that requires court to apply preemption at all.
Given the general anathema to double taxation, why should there not be a doctrine of preemption?
Well, this idea that double taxation would be a justification for invoking the doctrine of implied preemption is not in antipathy that's been created by the General Assembly, and there is the problem. It's one thing to say that the judiciary has created the doctrine of implied preemption. It's something entirely different to say that, therefore, we will use the judicial antipathy. This court's antipathy to double taxation would be the justification for invoking that implied preemption. If there's an inherent conflict, a statute that ordinance of oath can't be honored, that's one thing. If there's a dominant state need and a hindrance to that need, that's something. If there are actual words in a statute, that's something. But for this body to say, we don't like double taxation, when in fact, in this day and age, we have triple taxation, as we're all painfully aware. However, the state of taxation existed 80 years ago, when this court first began to address this issue, it's wildly different now.
Was it?
The General Assembly has not said that it has any benefit to double taxation.
Was it judicial activism that created the doctrine if it exists?
80 years ago, and as the decades passed, it was always an act of judicial activism.
Would it be an act of judicial activism then to change it?
No, it would be a very judicious thing to do.
I see. So it depends on whose ox is being gored. Like in every case when we get accused of that.
Not exactly, because both the city of Cincinnati as a home rule municipality and the state of Ohio have constitutional authority in the state to create tax ordinances and statutes to produce revenue, which this court has acknowledged is the essential prerequisite for any other acts of self-government the city needs to generate revenue. And Cincinnati Bell has paid this tax. Another error of the Court of Appeals is that it did not even reach the equitable issue, which the Court of Common Pleas ruled in favor of the cities on. And I don't want this court to be misled by the fact that it added at the end of the city brief. But it's a very important issue because this tax cost that Cincinnati Bell is objecting to is one that has been collected in its rates for decades.
Let me stop you. As you know, the appellee has cited a number of examples of when the General Assembly, instances where the General Assembly has carved out these exceptions, said that here's state taxation, but municipalities or some other entity may also tax. You've touched on it in your reply brief. I'd like to hear your strongest argument as to why that should not apply here. Here, as you know, there's no specific exception for municipal taxation of the general area. Why is the Appellee's argument not persuasive on that issue?
Since Cincinnati Bell has gone really out on a limb wrongfully by saying two things. One, they're saying that the General Assembly has to affirmatively grant the cities the power of tax. That's false. That the city derives its power to tax from the state constitution. Cincinnati Bell further says that the General Assembly has to expressly waive preemption. But that's a different way of saying the same thing. That's wrong as well. The power to tax for the city is derived directly from the state constitution. There is no empowerment required by the General Assembly. And the city stands as a municipality, stands on equal footing with the state of Ohio. There's a conflict, that's one thing. There's some dominant state interest, that's something. There are actual words, the General Assembly has acted, that's something. But when the judiciary puts its head together and says, we have a difficulty with us, that's a different matter. That's not a legislatively based expression of intent.
So when the General Assembly does that, it's doing it just to make it clear, I guess, that not to give some authority that the cities don't already have, but to make it clear that the policy of the law that's set by the General Assembly is that there will be these carve-outs. Is that your
My expectation is that the General Assembly, also having had to plow its way through 80 years of ambiguous and conflicting case law on this issue, in an abundance of caution, is trying to express itself in those areas.
So certain parts of the telecommunication business, while perhaps highly profitable, have also become very important. And the General Assembly has been wrestling with that change in technology and tax policy so as to not cause those kinds of businesses to leave the state. Has there been any recent legislation to indicate legislative intent or legislative concern as a state of quiet?
I'm not aware of any recent changes in the Ohio Revised Code. However, 718.02A, which was the existing statute, expressly acknowledges that cities will be taxing businesses that do businesses both inside and outside cities. And that is an expression of intent from the General Assembly. If you want to speculate and impute, take out language and speculate and impute from that, that the General Assembly has acknowledged that cities will be taxing businesses who are both inside and outside the city. Utilities are becoming more like other businesses. Not more different, but more alike. And I believe that's what Your Honor is referring to. And as such, they ought to be taxed like other businesses. And the city of Cincinnati treats utilities fairly by not going to tax any of the revenue that's already being taxed by the state, but rather only taxing that which is excluded from the state or receipts tax.
Before you sit down, you want to take time to argue your second point, that if in fact we rule against you, that there shouldn't be a refund?
Absolutely. In Cincinnati Bell, its additional authorities have cited a case which makes the city's point. The case cited, recent decision by this court in December, reiterates, as we all knew, that a rate is collected pursuant to lawful order of the PUCO. Pursuant to lawful order of the PUCO, as the record in this case establishes, Cincinnati Bell collected the tax costs for which it's now seeking a refund. In other words, were to prevail, it will have collected that cost twice. And the case cited says that the city of Cincinnati, consumers, nobody can do anything about it. Because once the rate established by the PUCO and collected, there is no case that can be brought for a refund of that amount. So if they prevail, they'll get millions of dollars twice, once in rates and once by way of refund from the city. So that's unfair and unjust and unnecessary. When and if they ever remove that tax cost from their rates, we can revisit that issue. That was our main.
Thank you, Mr. Ganulin. Mr. McMillan.
appeal should be affirmed because this decision correctly applied 70 years of case law by this court, holding that the state scheme for the taxation of public utilities preempts the entire field of the taxation of utilities.
Counsel, is it true that Cincinnati, New Hampshire, and Fairfax are the only cities in the state of Massachusetts?
No, it's the cities within Cincinnati Bell service area because Cincinnati Bell has been paying this tax started in 1955 and before.
Are there other cities in Ohio that collect this tax?
No, we have evidence of records. We have not been able to find any other jurisdictions, even though they had similar statutes, ordinances, and rules.
These are the only three that you're aware of that collect this type of tax?
No, there are another dozen in the southwest Ohio area.
Sure there are.
Nothing in Ameritex, United Telephone, or other service areas.
There are a lot of cases cited by both sides. There really is no case that is on all fours with this case, is there?
Your Honor, I believe that, in terms of the specific tax issue, that I believe this is simply a replay of East Ohio Gas.
But East Ohio Gas, I thought East Ohio Gas, the tax was on the same revenue.
No, the tax is on the same. In East Ohio Gas, you had the issue of a municipal tax, miscellaneous income tax, which the court held was a similar tax to the utility excise tax levied on the same taxpayer. I would point out that the utility excise tax in 1966 contained, I believe, some between 5 and 9 different exceptions from the tax base for the public utility tax. So we have some additional exceptions now. But, you know, I would point out those exceptions are the computing tax are in part due to taking the long-distance carriers out of the gross receipts tax in 1987, treating them as general corporations. When the General Assembly did it, before 1987, long-distance carriers were subject to the utility excise tax. They paid gross receipts tax on their intrastate receipts. In 1987, they were taken out, placed under the general corporate franchise tax, and the state instead levied a sales tax on long-distance service on both inter- and intrastate service. What I bring this up because the city of Cincinnati says there is a double taxation because the state does not tax these revenues. The state does tax these revenues. They have changed the format. But in both cases, you have a tax measured by the gross consumption of a telephone service. In the one case, the tax is buried within the rate because it is subject to a phone company. In another case, it is broken out. But most of the interstate revenues in this case, which the city of Cincinnati seeks to levy that income tax on, are part of the access charges paid by the long distance companies back to Cincinnati Bell for that part of the long distance call. Long distance call, you have a separate phone for AT&T.
Sure. So you're saying that they are taxed by the state then, to some extent?
Yes, the state has established a tax system to say, when dealing with telephone services, this is how we are going to tax those revenues. For local service, we're going to have a gross receipts tax. There are certain exclusions from the tax computation. When we're dealing with long distance service, we're going to pick up the revenues in that fashion. We're going to tax both interstate and intrastate long distance revenues, but we're going to do that through the form of the sales tax. The point is, if you come to the double taxation, one, the state does tax these revenues. This is precisely the situation which was dealt with in Havner, where the city attempted to levy a use tax on consumers of utility services where those services were not subject to the state sales tax. One of the revenues of tax.
Counselor, in Article 13, Section 6 of the Constitution, says the General Assembly shall provide for the organization of cities and impart and restrict their power of taxation so as to prevent the abuse of such power. Now, the General Assembly has done that with cities regarding the payroll income tax They've done it with regard to the inside and outside millage of 20 mills. Can you point to anything where the General Assembly, pursuant to Article 13, Section 6, has restricted the city's power of taxation with regard to this, or do you have to solely rely on the implied doctrine of preemption?
Now, there are two points, Your Honor. One is revised Code 718.01H, which was enacted in 1957, whereby the state regulated the authority of municipalities to levy an income tax. Nothing in this section, Section 718.02 of the revised code, shall authorize the levy of any tax on income obtained. This appropriation is not authorized to levy under existing law. What you have, then, is the codification of Hafner and Cincinnati versus AT&T saying that the taxation of public utilities is preempted.
We always thought that. I know in Toledo was the payroll income tax restriction. How can it be a restriction on the income of the corporation?
No, the issue, that issue, I think, goes to the issue
You think that's broad enough to cover this?
Absolutely.
Well, then it'd be broad enough to cover any taxation, including license fees that you would charge if it's a form of taxation for inspection of homes or gas wells or whatever we have across the state, plumbing inspections.
Let's back up a second on that, because that comes back to the point where the Cincinnati is claiming that the doctrine of preemption is a judicially created doctrine. And there are two points on that. One is Article 18, Section 3 states that municipalities shall have local powers for self-government and to adopt and enforce within their limits such local police, sanitary, and other similar regulations as are not in conflict with the general laws. The Constitution specifically talks about conflict with the general laws. How does one gauge the conflict with the general laws? The General Assembly doesn't have to say these local ordinances are in conflict. What you have within the text of the Constitution itself is a notion of conflict. Well, what is that? Preemption. The implied preemption is simply a judicial term for a doctrine which is embodied in the Constitution. Now, Article 18, Section 13 goes beyond that to state that laws may be passed to limit the powers of municipalities to levy taxes. So the state may regulate local taxing power even in the absence of a conflict. The state has that broader authority. Now, however we got at the expression of the doctrine of implied preemption, the fact is that for 70 years, the General Assembly has reacted to pronouncement of this court, which has stated that where the General Assembly has enacted a comprehensive taxing system, it is presumed that that preempts the field of taxation unless the General Assembly says otherwise.
Counsel, does your corporation pay other income taxes to the city of Cincinnati as to other businesses?
It would fall, but those taxes are on the employees.
Other businesses are taxed, are they not, to some fashion?
Under the Cincinnati income tax, yes, Your Honor.
On their income attributable to the city of Cincinnati?
That's correct.
On their business income?
That's correct.
Okay. But because you're a public utility, you're not taxed in that fashion?
Yes, that's correct.
So what we have here is a different way of measuring a tax on income for your business than the way they would measure the income in Procter & Gamble.
Yes, but I think what you come down to, the issue which you raise, though, is an issue of tax policy. If you come back to the General Assembly system, for general businesses, there is a specific waiver corporate franchise tax, 573306, which says the corporate franchise tax does not preempt the levy of municipal net income taxes. The second part is...
So there's just an absence in the statute of a similar statement as it applies to public utilities.
That's correct. There is no such waiver. But again, you have a similar waiver under the personal income tax. You have waivers of preemption with the real estate transfer tax. You have certain waivers to the sales tax. A site in the brief of pages 14 through 18 that does an example of that. Now, on the other hand, Under the utility property tax, for these years, Cincinnati Bell Telephone listed its property, personal property for taxation at 88% of depreciated cost, whereas general businesses only listed their property at 25%. Public utilities paid 3.5 times higher rate of tax on personal property than general businesses. So again, you have this system created by the General Assembly, whether it is the best system or the most appropriate.
But that revenue doesn't necessarily go to cities. Some of that goes to schools.
Some of that goes to schools, yes. Certainly that. And again, that was the policy, whether it is a policy judge.
But that's been changed also.
But that's one that's not for the years of issue, and two, for our property placed in service before 1995, still listed at a higher percentage. But there are still issues. There's a different depreciation schedule for public utilities. We can talk about that until the, for some time. But we are dealing with a situation where the General Assembly has set up a different system for utilities and has not changed that. At some point in May, the issue, though, is what has the General Assembly provided in their taxing system?
In the taxing system under 5727.38, the gross receipts tax by the state, you included that some of that does go back to municipalities through the state?
Well, there is a sharing of funds to the local government fund. And to that extent, you have the General Assembly saying, out of this cut of money to the state, we think it appropriate to share it with municipalities in this respect.
What impact do you think that makes on the government?
Well, it's further evidence of a comprehensive scheme of taxation of the preemption by implication. Now, the issue, the 3 points I'd like to make are preemption is the constitutional doctrine. It's not simply judicial creative. Section 13 does reserve broader powers to the state than Section 3 of Article 18. But what the city is that apart from abandonment of preemption by implication, which has much broader implications beyond the tax case, you then have the question of do we overturn East Ohio Gas paper, which has said the entire field of public utility taxation has been preempted by the state system. And there, again, coming back to the power of the General Assembly, the General Assembly in reliance on AT&T or Hafner on East Ohio Gas has the expectation that it has preempted municipal income taxation. There is one example cited in our brief of legislation that was introduced to give municipalities the power to levy an income tax. Didn't go anywhere. I'm not aware of any statutory change to date.
But isn't it also accurate that that the municipalities here tax is not taxed by the state because it's excluded from their tax base?
Well, two things.
You don't really pay tax on what they're assessing your tax.
One is the state, though, has levied a tax, and I think this is one case of confusing, the tax computation with the privilege tax. The privilege tax by the state at 5727.30 is for the privilege of owning property or doing business, whether interstate or interstate. It doesn't matter. That is the privilege tax. And the state has said we are going to create this system and say this should be taxed, this should not be taxed. Now, in terms...
So it is accurate that they're taxing is not being taxed by the state specifically or directly?
No, the state is elected to tax the final consumption of that.
I understand. But that component part is not subject to tax. They exclude that from their base.
But the question then comes, Mr. Justice, is that can the state, in creating a tax system, say we want this to be excluded from tax?
Yeah, I understand your argument. You're saying
that is the issue. We're agreeing on the issue.
Do they? But they don't say we want it to be excluded from the tax. They just don't include it. That's what I was looking for. I was looking for some specific statutory provision or constitutional provision that restricts their power. And I can't find it.
No, the issue, though, is the General Assembly has proceeded on the assumption of a very disoccupied field, the preemption of the tax. That applies not just to utility excise tax, but think about it, the sales tax, where there are some 36 exemptions and a dozen exclusions from the tax. Could municipality levying a sales tax on wholesale sales, for example, which are excluded from the definition of retail sale. We're going to have a good tax mess in time if we have these two conflicting systems.
I'm a little confused, but I thought I asked you the same question Justice Douglas just did. I thought you said in response to my question that the revenue, the interstate revenue, ultimately gets taxed because it's somehow figured into the intrastate revenue,
which is taxed for long distance carriers. You have the local, what the state has exempted is the access portion, which goes up, which is a component of a long distance call, whether it's intrastate, is that really is billed to the consumer by the long distance carrier. The long distance carrier pays access charge back to the local company.
He knows
it's participation in that long distance call. That's where the state has said the service, rather the consumption, the revenue from the consumption of that service gets taxed.
I know the red light's on, but before you sit down, you better tell us why you should get a refund. You've already collected all this money from people, build it into your rate base. Now you have, whatever it is, $7 or $8 million there as part of your rate base. You've collected it, and now you want it back from them. Wouldn't that be the same thing you're accusing them of, double taxation?
That is a question to be resolved for the Public Utility Commission. This is no different than had we collected an overpayment that we had made to a...
Yeah, but you know we can't, we can't retroactively rate make.
Well,
and you know there can't be a refund under the Kelco case, Kiko case. You can't do it, so
well,
you're going to keep it.
Let's put it this way. There is an issue where... which has not been argued, not been put in, not been. There is no record before this court. This is not an appropriate case to consider where the issue is prospective rate making, but you also have to consider there is basically a target revenue set, and the Utilities Commission has the authority to adjust if you go over or under. There is nothing to suggest whether we go over or under our permitted rate of return.
I understand.
Thank you, Mr. McMillan. Mr. Gagnon, you've saved 30 seconds.
The record does have the affidavit of Mr. David Efron, who has been a very reputable public utility rate making expert, who has been cited by this court in the past for years now. And the record establishes that his tax costs have been collected in the rates of the city bill.
Counsel, is there something unique about your tax ordinance different from other municipalities in the state?
Not to my knowledge. Okay. No. And there are about 25 municipalities in Southwest Ohio that tax.
Okay. Yeah. Do you collect this tax on other public utilities?
Yes. Yes. Yeah, it'll have a major adverse revenue impact on the city of Cincinnati to, one, have to pay refunds of millions of dollars and then forego
collecting. Municipalities that are not collecting it have basically the same tax structure, they're just not.
So I can't speak to what the rest of the state of Ohio is doing. I do not know what all the other municipalities in the state of Ohio are doing.
Do you have any idea what suddenly drives this after all these years?
I can only explain what Cincinnati
a new young
said.
Lawyer?
They said they were asleep at the switch and woke up one day in 1994. So they would have to answer that question.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Gagnon. Case is submitted. You will be advised of our opinion.